up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome to Extension Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 45. NASDAQ futures down 150. Dow futures down 334. And oil up. We got gold up. We got silver up. Seems to be in somewhat of a response to the 35% tariff on Canada. Of course, it's hard to tell what's doing what where, but that seems to be the headline response, according to CNBC. We have Professor Kevin.
Okay.
35%, 50%, 75%, what's the difference? You know, just every day a different number. And very strange. I don't know exactly what the plan is, but maybe there is one. Who knows? What do you make of it all?
I don't. I don't pay attention. Why should I pay attention to something that changes every week?
Well, if the goal is to get people to invest, I'm not so sure that's where it's heading.
Well, that's your problem. That ain't mine.
Why would that be a problem? Would you head for a loan with this happening?
Well, let me put it that way. That's your goal. I'm not out there trying to get people to invest in anything.
It appears that that's what this is all for, right? Is it more stuff comes back here and people build stuff?
Well, we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. Anyway, was talking to a dude last night who was regaling me about people making all this money in women's college basketball, and which, of course, we've talked about on many occasions. And the conversation got to, people are staying because they're making as much in college than they are in a pro. I mean, I think in women's ball, that's probably true, eh? I don't know. I guess it might be.
Yeah, well, that probably is. Olivia Miles being the most recent example of someone who's making a lot more money than she would going into the WNBA.
Do people generally lose their NIL stuff when they go in the NBA, or they keep it?
Well, that's a good question, because the personal endorsements are portable, right? We got to deal with State Farm, we got to deal with Gatorade, you know, whoever it is. Those are portable, and those would move with you. But the stuff that they're doing out of collectives, or now that, you know, after the settlement, the NIL pool, which it really doesn't have that much to do with NIL, that the schools are administering, that's just payroll. And yeah, you get off the school's payroll, you don't get to keep getting paid.
I guess there's really no way for us to have a real handle on it, but let's say Olivia Miles, what's her name, Hannah Hidalgo, she's Red Bull, right? What did Miles get? She's somebody.
Well, she's got a bunch of them.
I guess my question is, if Hannah Hidalgo gets drafted by the Sidewash City women's team, does she have more national exposure in the Irish? I mean, does Red Bull not want her to leave?
Well, probably not. I don't think she's eligible for the draft for 2 more years, though, so it doesn't matter.
Well, what I'm saying is it, you know,
would they prefer, where she's on national TV all the time? I mean, you think about the exposure that that some of the athletes make, and this would apply to men's basketball as well, between getting into feature games because your team's good and therefore you're on network TV every weekend, and then the ability to watch, you know, like via the ACC network, the Big Ten network, or whatever, SEC network, those games are on a lot too, and then other syndications. Yeah, Hannah Hidalgo is going to be on TV, on national TV, a lot more as a college player than she ever would on WNBA. In fact, I'm kind of astounded by the WNBA sometimes and their inability to get their product on TV. They do have, you know, they'll show up on ABC or CBS, and they'll show up on some of the cable sports networks, like the CBS, the CBS's sports network. I think they call it CBS Sports Network. They'll show up on there once in a while. They'll show up on the NBA channel, but I'm astounded sometimes that if you were to look and say, is there a WNBA game? It's a slow night, not much going on in baseball, you know, only about five games or something like that. You know, slow night, nothing much happening, and you can't find a WNBA game if you were interested. I'm just so, you know, I don't go hunting for WNBA games. I'm just interested in the coverage and what they're trying to do with their league. And while they continue to announce expansion, they're just not getting their product on in front of any national audience frequently enough to justify the expansion. Either they don't have the popularity to negotiate these TV deals, or they're just dropping the ball.
Okay, what I'm trying to do, which is a if I was in my integer programming and network flows class, which I didn't do very well in, by the way, if I was trying to connect the dots, this is almost like a salesman coloring problem, where you're trying to figure out what is the motivation for people essentially watching a game. What is, and it ties in with this gambling thing, and it even ties in with the, you know, the loss part, but let's not talk about that. You know, the losses only be covered 90% times the other. I mean, if you look at let's take the NFL, for instance. And, you know, obviously feel free to interrupt. I mean, somehow or another, they've created a choreography where I'm going to say, you know, 15 years ago, you walked into Tripoli Tap on a Sunday, and there's 25 guys in there, 30, that are all into this, and Nick's got, you know, not huge TVs, but he's got 7 or 8 TVs that you can go, and there's guys watching, you know, glued to the Seattle God knows who game. And you got one set of fans, I think, that watch Dub Bears, you know, and have their whole life, and obviously people who watch the Patriots that live up there. That's like group A. Then there's group sort of B, that loves the gamble on it and is going to sit there on a Sunday afternoon drinking 5 beers watching the Seattle game because they got $200 on the game. And the NFL has done a pretty good job, matter of fact, a spectacular job at kind of spreading this out. And now you got fantasy football and people are watching, you know, San Diego play Phoenix. I won't say who gives a crap because it's good sports, but you really wouldn't give a crap if your halfback wasn't playing. You'd watch the Bear game and, you know, maybe cookout or something. They've managed to do all these other things that bring people into the mix for reasons other than just standing there loving football. And I wonder what percentage of the take that creates. And now we've got the FanDuel and the other stuff that are, you know, you can do it online, and people are making bets as to whether the guy's going to, you know, run or pass the next play, for God's sake. And it becomes almost a phobia kind of for those people. Well, now we're kind of cracking down on them a little bit. But also, we're looking at, you know, the women's NBA. You know, if the Irish are playing, and I want to talk to you about it the next day, I have a little bit of an affinity. I would no more watch UCLA play, you know, somebody in women's basketball than the Man in the Moon. It's not like I don't like the fact that women play basketball. Why shouldn't they? Guys do it, and it's a lot of fun. Last night, the Cubs were off and the sacks get rained out, right? So I go downstairs and Marquise got Team Frisbee. And it's on TV.
Ultimate Frisbee. Great sport.
And I'm sitting there going, this looks like it might be fun to play, but I'm not going to buy a ticket for it. I don't really want to watch it. But it's on. We have airtime. And I guess there's 20 people in the stands. And they're playing up at Northwestern. By the way, Northwestern's temporary stadium is pretty nice. It's not horrible. I mean, it's not 100,000 people, but it's pretty nice.
Right there on the lakefront. Probably yeah. Beautiful setting, yeah.
And but, I mean, they're temporary stands, but they're the nicest ones I've ever seen. Anyway, you start to connect the dots on all this, and what does it take to make some of this stuff successful? What makes, if I don't have any money on the game, do I really want to watch two women's team from Indianapolis and some other place? I mean, I guess if Caitlin Clark's playing for one of my might, but I mean, it doesn't mean it's not terrific. Doesn't mean the people aren't great. What's the motivation? If there was no gambling to the football, and there was no you know, you bet on the individual people, the fantasy stuff. I don't know. I mean, what is there? Maybe you'll watch the Bears and turn it off, or maybe the second game or something. I mean, I don't know the answers. I'm just saying, you sort of got to be careful before you invest in all this. Is where your money's coming from.
Well, I think with it varies from league to league based on all kinds of factors, and so I don't pretend to know every factor. I think the NBA was the first major successful TV enterprise. Yeah, we had local baseball, and local baseball was very popular, always very popular. But on a national scale, it was the NBA, and I think in large part that's because, or the NFL, because the NFL could be an event. It was a Sunday event, and
by the way, if you were older, you would say boxing or bowling?
And bowling was always popular, especially Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Boxing was, I remember boxing being a big deal. And
Friday night, every night was like 2 hours of fights.
Saturday night fights were it. There was a lot going on there, but the NFL could make an event. Then they went to Monday nights, and Monday nights, well, we could call that a special game. And that became very much a must-see TV for a lot of fans, whether your team was in it or not. But I think the NFL has made the mistake of diluting their product to Thursdays and special Tuesday events and Saturday. They are taking special away from it, but they're pretty well entrenched, and it's a good gambling league. So I think a lot more people were gambling on football back when back in the day than were on other sports, so it really lent itself to a lot of that. When you start looking at some of the other sports that play an extended schedule, and that really is your NBA, WNBA, baseball, it's harder to build national audiences for that. And so I'm going to watch my team because I'm interested in that. If there's another game on, I may watch it because I'm not doing anything else, or it's background while I'm doing some work or whatever. But it doesn't become must-see TV. And I think that's where you are with the NBA, for example. And because what NBA players are able to do when compared to WNBA players, as you look at it, 6'3", 6'4", is a center or a power forward in the WNBA. It's a point guard in the NBA. The speed of the game, the explosiveness, even when it's sloppy, they're doing things that the women just can't do. And so I think the women's WNBA's problem is they suffer by comparison. It's the same sport, but not the same caliber of athletes. Doesn't mean they don't have great players. Doesn't mean they don't have outstanding athletes. But you have to appreciate the game for what it is on its own merits, because if you get into comparisons, it can't measure up. It would be the same thing in any other sport. And so, I think that hurts them. And a lot of basketball fans don't warm up to the NBA or WNBA just because of that. Just because they don't see the flying dunks, they don't, and you So it's hard for they have a harder sell anyway because of the comparison factor.
Well, it's the, I mean, a lot of stuff is kind of coming to their front here, and a lot of it plays into, unfortunately, plays into the economy. When we talk about the economy, you're talking about politics, you're talking about stock prices, you're talking about prices being paid for these teams, and you look around and it's kind of sort of all over the place, Kevin. I was looking.
I would add one more thing. It's ultimately a consumer product.
Right. Well, I mean, but I think there's a difference.
What product is entertainment? You know, it's more akin from the popularity standpoint. If you're trying to sell product, you know, yeah, there are investments. There's pricing for what the franchises are worth and all of that. But if you can't get people to come in and watch your game, whether on TV or in person, you can value it all you want. It's not going to be successful.
Well, what do you? Just the difference of. I don't know, I'll use the crazy term, I'll say male eyes and male attention, because mostly we're talking male, but not necessarily. What is the difference between you and I, even today, probably maybe me more so because I got to talk about it on the show because I don't feel the same way about it when I used to, watching the Bears. Now, we're always going to watch the Irish, right? I mean, I guess we're going to do that till the day we die, but between us, you know, setting the time aside to watch the Bears, I can always use the excuse that I got to talk about it, but I'm going to watch them anyway, right? What is the difference between the commercial for us on that show and you and I walking downstairs or to Tripoli Tap and having a beer and whatever game's on, rather than staring at the person next to us? Our eyes are going to be on the game, but kind of only half-assed. Now, it's there, we're going to watch it play, and if something crazy happens, somebody's going to say, watch that one, and we'll watch the replay, but we're really not zeroed in on the, you know, Denver LA game. I mean, it's not. I mean, our attention is, instead of 90%, it's 30 or 20. How do you, if you're a commercial guy, how do you value that?
How do you value it for what you're willing to pay to advertise on?
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
I think A, you're going to value it based on the local fan base for the teams involved. So even if you have half-assed attention in New York for a game against with the Bears and the Lions, you know, where people say good game, I'm kind of interested, but it's not getting my undivided attention. Or more to the point, it's you're not planning your day around that, so you may watch part of the game, but you may or may not watch all of it. So I really want to know what's the audience that's going to be watching this game that is going to stick with it from the first to the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
I would put a lot of value on that as far as what kind of advertising I do. I might be more inclined when it's, San Francisco and Denver. I might be more inclined to pick up some of those local spots that are available. Where get thrown to the local TV station, I might be more inclined to spend my money there, you know, just zeroing in on the cities involved.
As far as the
national stuff, there's not that many teams that draw national attention. And think about how you plan out your Sunday when the Bears are on. You know, you might have a noon game Central Time. Well, you make sure that you might have a few chores to do. You might need to run to the grocery store. You might need to do a lot of things. But between 12 and 3, you don't have to. So you block off that time to watch the Bears. Whereas anybody else, if the Bears game is the first one on in their local market, they say, yeah, I'll do that, and I'll pick it up as soon as I get home from the store.
Well, it's all kind of...
as soon as I get done cutting the grass.
But you know, unfortunately, I guess I have this mindset, Kevin, where immediately if I watch something or think of something, I apply it to other stuff. I mean, I've been, you know, ragging out this week a lot about what's going on with the money supply and Trump continuing to berate Powell when he's pouring money into the system. I don't know how much more he wants poured in, but evidently a real lot. But, you know, I couldn't help but doing the my calculations on NVIDIA. Trade 163. It's down 91 cents this morning. Kevin, it's $6 a share revenue, for God's sake. I mean, it's... I'm not saying it could go to 300. I don't know, because I don't have any puts on it. I don't short it or anything like that. You know, I look at Oracle. Oracle is now way more expensive on numbers than it was in 2000, when it absolutely collapsed. Not saying anything about anything. I'm just saying, and you've got Bitcoin at all-time highs, and there's no revenue, and there's no earnings. And then you've got the guy in Oklahoma getting a $258 million no-cut contract. And I just wonder if this view of the world that everybody's got going forward is the correct one. I've seen it where it wasn't, let's put it that way, two or three times in my investment lifetime, and I've read about other times. And we've got, you know, a president who's rattling the cage with tariffs and stuff, and the last time somebody tried this, it was a total disaster, which isn't to say that it will be this time, because last time the world was in a different place than it is now. It's never the same. But it's, you look at all, I mean, how does somebody right now say, yeah, I'll pay this kid $250 million over the next 10 years? I mean, God's sake, Kevin, it's a lot of dough. I mean, without any kind of out clause, without any kind of, what if we're in a depression, with no kind of economic, you know, caveat in there, no nothing? But boy, oh boy, people are pretty freaking confident, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
I mean, I see it in stock prices. I see it in housing.
Are you saying there's a potential for irrational exuberance here?
Well, you know, Jimmy, who helps with the show on Thursday, you know, his dad's been around. I mentioned this the other day. His dad's been around. He's 92, 91, something like that. He was with, God, Kevin, he was with, his father was in the business, and he was a kind of a big shot at Hornblower & Weeks, which is an old line firm, and they got bought by somebody. They all moved to New York, and Dad was amazingly successful. He was a member of Congressional, I think, or I don't know. But anyway, he tells Jimmy the other day, man, I never seen anything like it. No, nobody can afford the rent. Nobody can afford the house. The stock prices are higher than I've ever seen them. What the hell's going on? The guy's 92. I mean, it doesn't mean that he's right, of course. He just said, how do you do that? Nobody can afford anything, and yet stuff's going higher. It's, you know, it's a view of the world. And you wonder, can it go on forever? Maybe not. Can it go on for another month or year? Sure, it could, or 5 years or whatever. And you wonder what, you know, the Fed's point in all this is. And the key thing, and I keep trying to say this, and I don't probably too much, every time you do some of these things, whatever your motivation is, if you want to create inflation, whatever you do, just take an hour and go back and look at the history of the Weimar Republic and who it benefited and who it didn't. I mean, the most ecstatic people about the Weimar pour money into the system, even though the people with the wheelbarrow trying a loaf of bread, it wasn't so hot for them. But anybody who owned a farm or property that was able to pay their mortgage off in 6 months with money that was, you know, worth 1/100th of what the loan was to start with, they're all for it. Governments are in big debt. They're all for it. Anybody who has property, you know, people that have a lot of money, people that have stock, they're all for it. The rest of the people aren't. I mean, and it's don't know they shouldn't be. Let's put it that way. And I just hope it doesn't reach the point where it's so obvious to everybody. Because when that day, if that day ever happens, Kevin, it's not gonna look so hot. Just saying. And it all kind of comes together.
It won't look so hot. And so the question I would have, and this would just be for speculation, are there? Let's look at it this way. What industries are more or less immune to that day coming?
Well, there's two levels. Again, every question is like, you can't just answer. There is, if some massive revaluation happens, and NVIDIA is trading 50 instead of 163, doesn't really affect NVIDIA at all, does it, if they're selling the same amount of stuff? I mean, 2000 didn't really affect GM selling cars a little bit, if there was, you know, some people maybe
credit for. Immunity is tied to whether it will continue to sell stuff at all.
Yeah, and your, if the valuation of your six flat goes from a kind of absurd $1 million when you didn't sell it or whatever. I mean, that doesn't goes down to 700, and you're still getting your rent, you're still making money. I guess other than not selling it at the top, you're not really hurt, are you? People are still in there rent, paying the rent.
Not hurt until people don't want to rent your price anymore. And now if you have to cut your price in half just to keep the place rented, now you got a problem.
I'm saying the person who didn't go crazy in the first place and throw his old renters out and get the absolute most he could from people and got on every rent in there, and then those people can't afford it and they all got to go. But if you never really raised them that, you know what I'm saying? It's very individual. I mean, it's just sort of individual. But if you're running a bar,
well,
and
it is individual. Yeah. But in your rent example, your property owner has to have a strategy. And is the strategy, do I squeeze the rock as much as I can now to get as much out of it as I can, or do I protect myself by staying in the reasonable rate? And I think that's really, isn't it, your question about any business? That's why I asked the question about industries, is, what would you do if you were responsible for a strategy for NVIDIA? What would you do if you were responsible for strategy for McDonald's? And a lot of the fast food places really got caught up by the inflation surge a few years ago, and saw their revenue hits come, and had to backtrack on some of their pricing, or at least come up with some pricing alternatives, because people don't want to go into McDonald's and get charged $11 or $12 for one meal.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty good with the two-step on that. I mean, Russell's are, what is he? He's gotten the exact same thing for breakfast for, 20 years? I mean, it's sort of interesting. Most people don't do that. But he could give you an absolute, penny by penny of how much it's gone up. And I don't think it's come down at all, Kevin. I think it stopped going up as fast, but I don't think it's come down. I'll ask him Wednesday, but what the hell is he got a Big Mac?
Probably went up and hasn't come down. And his alternative is now, I don't know because I don't go to McDonald's, but I would imagine. But I know that they were all coming up with, here's our special bundle or a special price for. So there's probably something Russell could get as an alternative. If he weren't a slave to habit, and that would bring his price down. And I think that's what you started to see there, is because everybody was so focused on hitting the same margins that they always did when the price that they ran their prices up to cover, and they forget very often that it's as much about share. It's about whether your market is growing at all anyway. And when people's budgets start to tighten and you're in the fast food business, that's gonna take a hit. And you wanna, if you're in a market that's not growing, you better have enough critical mass. You can't drive your customers away.
Well, it also, when you start to, that's why the lady Russell brought on Wednesday was so interesting, just trying to do something like the CPI, and trying to do whether you can't just be, somebody thinks they know it all. Hope you and I don't act that way. Where you see a line for a drive-through at McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts or wherever the hell it is, and you say, "Man, these guys, they're doing a land office business. They're kicking ass." I mean, what you don't know. If you go into the Dunkin' Donuts, I was there last Saturday because I had workers over, and I always go there and get them a nice breakfast. And by the way, it costs a fortune. But for myself, I always just look up at the board, and wherever the special is, I get it, right? But you don't know. I mean, what you couldn't possibly know, or I couldn't possibly know, is if the person gets in line at the Dunkin' Donuts and says, and now an extra large coffee is $4.20. You don't know if the guy gets in line and says, give me two donuts, and they go, would you like coffee with that? And the guy says no, and he pulls a iced tea out from the seat next to him. Because I don't know, I don't think, certainly the breakfast wraps are nowhere near the margin that the coffee is. So if you get 10 people out of 30 doing that, I think the Dunkin' Donuts profit for the day is kind of down the rat hole. But you would never know that by looking at the people in line, right? Same way, you know, at the McDonald's. How many go in and instead of getting the Big Mac, look at the dollar special and get something off there and, you know, tide them over till they get home? I mean, you don't, it's hard to really under, and plus it's hard to figure out now at McDonald's or any of those Burger King, same way. I'm going to say the dollar special 2 years ago is now $1.59. Okay, but it's still a special, but it's no longer the dollar special. But, I mean, if you and I wanted to be accurate on the CPI, as much as I rag at that, because I think they're cheating on a large scale, it's a tough job, isn't it? I mean, what are the prices of McDonald's? Are they up or down? How do you know? Something was on special, no longer on special. Remember how long it was a dollar for every beverage, right? Well, that ship has sailed. What's a coffee at McDonald's now? $3?
No, because I don't go there.
Well, but I mean, it's not a buck. Let's put it that way.
What I'm saying, yeah, and what I'm saying is, you know, yeah, the margin on coffee is higher. So, you know, the question gets to be, is you take your example. You know, I just stock up at the store, but, you know, get some, get some tea or something like that that isn't, you know, might still be outrageously expensive compared to making it yourself, but. But nevertheless, it, you know, it's cheaper than spending the money on the Dunkin' Donuts coffee. That's fine. That's fine. You can do it. But when they keep checking the prices up on the coffee, they should, you know, maybe they're really looking at an 80% gross margin on it, and trying to defend that margin when they should be perfectly happy with 60% because they can keep selling them. And they can't keep selling them at the 80% margin anymore. So, you know, I think that's, you know, those are all the dynamics that are going on. I don't, you know, we tend to think of price levels rising and therefore you know, we just mark everything up to match it. And, you know, and that would be whether it's with tariffs or whether it's with just general inflation. However you want to look at it, but it doesn't really matter. That's not how pricing decisions are generally made. Most of the time, you know, they're looking to they should be at least looking at per sale, whether it's per sale in at, you know, when somebody gets the drive through, or whether it's per sale you know, on a business to business type of transaction. You have to rationalize a little bit more than just simple-mindedly saying, oh, my price went up 10%, my cost went up 10%, my price is going up 10%. That isn't how it works for the most part. For, you know, bad businesses do it that way, and they cost themselves.
Well, I mean, we went, just as a kind of an example, Kevin, 4th of July, of course, somebody said one of our favorite Italian place is open. Let's meet, you know, let's meet Kathy, Audrey's good friend, who just retired from Southern Beverages there for many years. She was also was a trader on the floor, real nice lady, a Domer. She went to Notre Dame. And Kathy McGrath, red-haired Irish girl, went to Notre Dame. Imagine that, huh, Kevin? And so we end up at this Mexican place. It's pretty nice, and they're trying to go upper end a little bit as much as they can on the south side. So we have one margarita piece. I have a burrito. Kathy has a chimichanga, and Audrey has the enchiladas, and it's $150 with tax, and that's a real number. I mean, a burrito at any one of the stands in the city is $8, and it's probably better. So, you know, looking to have, I go, does anybody want another drink? And Kathy goes, hey, I got a perfectly good backyard with all these flowers. I got some whistle pig 15 years old, and I got some ice cream. What do you say we do that? And I go, that sounds like a plan to me. I mean, otherwise it would have been what, another $100? I mean, you know, what are we doing here?
Yeah, and I think when you try to operate like that, now you may be looking at a restaurant. I don't know if it's newer or or if it's been around a while, but you may be looking at somebody who committed to a high overhead when they open the restaurant. And that's why you see so many restaurants die anyway in their first year. They may have put themselves in a box where they have to charge high prices. But by charging high prices, by charging an arm and a leg for a margarita, they just sent you to the backyard.
Yeah, I mean, but I also, what I've, for the last, God, Kevin, for the last 5 to 8 years, I've tried, because we've had a few restaurant people on the show, and I happen to know some, that the cost of the chow on your plate now has nothing to do with what you get charged. And I first got this clue out of all people. They had, I haven't seen them on since, of course I don't watch it minute by minute, but the head of White Castle, of all people, was on CNBC. And I think Maria Bartiromo was still there. She goes, what's the biggest challenge to the restaurant industry? And he said something to the effect, the overhead prices are getting so big that the cost between a dinner at home and a dinner at a restaurant is egregiously high, and to the point where it's liable to ruin the business. And I sat there listening, I go, now there is a point of view. First of all, it's amazingly honest on national TV, right, which you don't normally get. Everybody's got their agenda, right? And I talked to a restaurant, Al. Maybe I'll have him back on. And he developed in this Italian place and started it up and everything. And he was telling me they don't have steaks or anything. This is 5 years, just before COVID, Kevin. And I said, what does it cost you to actually put a plate, Italian, because I'm a pretty good Italian cook myself. I know I can spaghetti up the room for $5, right? It doesn't cost that much. And he goes, my most expensive dinner that I put out is linguine with clam sauce, only because I'm stubborn and I use 4 or 5 real clams in there, and it cost me $4.50, and it's $22.50 on the menu. And this has to be before COVID, so it's 2020. And so at that point, it was 5 or 6 to 1. And that was before the electric bill went to the moon, the taxes went to the moon, and everything else. So, and his idea of it was, there's a lot of different ways to do cost accounting, but most of the time, you and I would say how much you make on a certain dinner, and you contribute it towards fixed, right? I'm using terms here that I'll shut up here in a second. But he goes, no, I have how many tables of 4. If I'm lucky, I get 2 turns a night. So if you do the math, I need $35 a person to break even. If I get 40, I make a few bucks. But if I get 30 or 25, or table doesn't order a drink, or they don't get an appetizer, and it comes down to $26 a person, it's all I have is a dinner and water, I lose dough. Even though the dinner cost me $4.50 and I charge $22. And I think it's kind of hard to understand that, but the valuation of your butt in a chair has gone totally different. I mean, from our end, we're Southsiders and go, God, this burrito is $20. It looks to me like I could make one for $2. It's not the way anybody looks at it anymore, because the overhead has become such a big deal, the electric bill, the fact that somebody put $3 million in the place, so there's 48 TVs around. You got to pay for that, right? It has nothing to do with the cost of your burger.
And that's why I said that it's why so many restaurants die. I'm going to create an amazing sports bar. I'm going to put TVs everywhere. I'm going to do all of that kind of stuff. And that upfront investment is so huge that you better be able to recover it. You better be popular right off the bat, and you better be able to recover all of those expenses in some short order, because you so many of these places eat up all their cash right up front, and they don't have much left when it comes time to operate. Now, in the case of a White Castle, it is the uncontrollables that keep rising. So theirs is a little bit different because they're on tighter margins anyway. Their property obviously is at the same level of expense, and there aren't a whole bunch of TVs in there or anything like that. But so it is a combination of the two. Is, how well, what was your financial plan to start with, and was it solid? And then you throw on top of it, and now I have a bunch of uncontrollable expenses. And you better go into any business knowing what your uncontrollables are and be able to, you know, run scenarios and say, what's my worst case on this? Because if I encounter the worst case, it could knock me out of business.
Well, I mean,
a lot of times in business, your only job is to just keep in the game for a while and let things shake out. But, you know, that requires cash.
Well, I think
cash flow.
People at every level, Kevin, never... Now, I use my buddy Restaurant Al again, but also Nancy comes on every week, and Audrey will more on the selling part, but Nancy on the mortgage part. Nobody seems to have a budget for a rainy day of any consequence. And whether you rent and have a car or two, I mean, nobody is able to. I won't say nobody, but most people do not think in terms of. I'll give you an example with Al. Remember the polar vortex, what was that, like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, as Maddie was still doing the show. They had a refrigeration line or a water line that snuck for a little bit outside to reach a dishwasher. Well, the line blew, and it was like between buildings, and it was, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 to get some skinny guy in there or whatever they did. And I said, Al, do you have any sort of an account somewhere where just as part of doing business you put $500 a month in it because you know something's going to happen somewhere? And he goes, well, no, nobody does that. And I go, well, you know, it's the
might
same.
Might be a good time to start thinking about it.
Well, I mean, but Nancy will say the last dime, and our buddy Doc Doherty, same thing. He used to do closings for people, and he doesn't anymore. He goes, it's stunning, and he's an attorney, how many people I do a closing for that we have to go out to dinner. I have to pay because their last nickel went into the house. I mean, the thought of having, wait a minute, let's have...
So we talk about uncontrollables, and then you're adding another kind of uncontrollable, and that's contingency.
Yeah.
You do have to have contingency funds as well, because whether it's, you know, the line of the dishwasher broke or the roof started leaking, it doesn't really matter. It's gonna cost you a lot of money to do it, and not everybody's gonna line up to finance that. Not if you don't have the cash flow to support it.
Well, I also, you know, some things have changed. Aud and I go to this place on 159th. It's an Irish place called the Ashford House. They got all this Irish chow and go for breakfast. They got a big food store there. With, you know, if ever you want to get like a couple of quarts of soup to take home, that would be the spot. But they also do huge catering for people. And in the back, they've got, you know, all this. They can cater, you know, some for $1,000 without shaking their nose. I mean, or 1,000 people. I mean, and they, you know, it's a big building they have with all this stuff together. And I said, if you look back, what are some of the mistakes you made? And he says, well, you know, he goes, we got, you know, he lobbed some number out of how many refrigerators and freezers they have and all this other kind of crap. And he says, what we did is we went to these, you know, auctions and stuff, and we bought stuff used where we thought was really a good deal. And he goes, 15 years ago, it would have been a good deal. He said, but now, if it doesn't last, the cost of getting it serviced has gone up way worse than any inflation. You try and get your furnace fixed or your refrigerator fixed, $500-$600 for some guy to come in and put a bulb in or something. He goes, we're all from the South Side. You'd rather get a deal on something used than buy something new, because you can't do that now, because the cost of servicing the damn thing, unless you know how to do it yourself, which I don't, because it's off the chart. I mean, there's parts of this inflation that is not picked up in the CPI, and people, they're under the radar, Kevin. They're under the radar. And people are in way worse shape on this than they think. I mean, because if you haven't had your transmission go out or something, or somebody give you a slight dent in your car, you're oblivious to it, but, and hope it never happens to you. But if it does, be careful, right?
Yeah. The exposures are there, and... I actually think there's probably more people than we're given credit for that recognize the exposure. They're not in a position to do anything about it, and so they're just dreading the day. You know, can we not have? You know, hopefully that day doesn't come.
Well, I used to, as you know, I used to love traveling out of town, and every week or anything, but every couple of years, I'd go buy an older truck, you know, that I kind of liked. And I'd look at it, and I'd, you know, okay, there's a few glitches the thing has, and that's okay. I got guys that'll give me a decent price, and it's not that much to get them fixed, and no big deal. I could get that done just because I like people, and we've known the same people for 40 years. I can get it done cheaper than just about anybody else. That ship has sailed, Kevin. All of a sudden, now wait a minute. It's going to take me 2 weeks to get in, and I'm paying retail. It's, you know, wait a minute. I get in right away. I've been coming here for 30 years, and by the way, I've never paid retail. Never will. Well, sorry.
The response to that is one of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, last time I went to one guy in Orland that I really like, he goes, "Yeah, I can fix that. I'll put you in for the 21st. And I go, "It's the 2nd. It's broken. That's the first time I can get you in." I go, "Thanks, but no thanks." I mean, I see this happening, and for some reason, Kevin, it died down, and now it's kicking up again. And I really don't understand this thing between Trump and Powell. Does he really want Powell to dump $2 trillion into which it would take, I think, to drive the rates down 3% temporarily before the long rates went up? Does anybody really think that's a strategy, or what is all that about? Do you have an idea?
I'm telling you, I think he just wants rates down so that they can roll the debt to 10-year.
Well, I mean, I don't think it will.
You know, that is definitely a survive this year and then we'll worry about next year type of thing. And there's a lot of people that are, you know, they're running their business that way, they're running their lives that way, their personal finances that way. That's the current economy.
Well, what
So we go back to, you know, you talk about when that day comes, you know, there's a lot of things that could blow up and that are, you know, just ticking time bombs sitting out there in the economy waiting, you know, that you hope don't blow up, but they might.
Well, you don't really hope they don't blow up.
At the same time, we're kind of screwed.
We hope we grow into it, right? I mean, yeah. we hope that...
Yeah, hope's not much of a strategic plan.
Well, as I say with our buddy Carl all the time, I think it's probably not going to work, but I'd like to give it a try rather than just blow the place up. I mean, right? I mean, I think there's a chance we could sort of grow into it, Kevin. I get a different view of the world.
I think what, you know, what Carl is saying, and I get the counter argument, and he can jump in. He's online now. What you're really saying is, you know, he's an advocate of saying we should have taken our medicine a long time ago, but we're going to have to take our medicines now, because if we don't, it's going to blow up.
But what's...
Well, so...
Yeah, but what's the medicine?
No, here's an example of how, you know, you were talking about how stupid some of these valuation numbers have gotten, you know, things like NVIDIA, right? So I put
or basketball teams, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter where you look, right? Yeah. It's everywhere. But I put an article up yesterday where I pointed out the insanity of the claims that are being made for so-called AI. And one of the people on my system fed this into Grok and said, "Analyze this," okay, which of course isn't AI. And Grok came back and essentially attempted to defend the position that you've espoused, which is, well, you know, we can grow into this. There's, you know, there'll be future benefits from this in sciences and, you know, coding, whatever. And so, you know, he posted back what Grok had said. And I said, okay, I'm sorry, but mathematics and physics are not wishes and dreams. They're hard physical facts that nobody has ever figured out how to beat. And the reality of it is this: a human mind consumes 20 watts of energy. All right. Now, we can charge all of the overhead.
I think I know a few people that are maybe at the 10 watt level.
Well, there's, yeah. I know a few people that are probably a little light on that budget, but. You know, a human brain consumes 20 watts of energy. Okay, that's just that. That's a physical fact. And so, as a result, we can get to consistent units because a standard work year, in employment parlance, is 2,000 hours, 50 weeks,
2080, yeah. Bud.
No, because you get 2 weeks off.
Okay,
for vacation. So it's 2,000 hours because it's 50 weeks times 8 hours a day times 5 days a week, right? So, all right, so this means that the human mind, if we charge all the overhead to cognitive function, and that's probably unfair, but we'll go ahead and we'll do it. Why? Because the computer is not just the power to run the CPU or the GPU and the memory and whatever. It's also the air conditioning to get the heat out of the room so it doesn't melt. It's also the switching equipment so that the data has somewhere to go. You know, there's all kinds of other, but those are all in the power bill that the data center guy pays, all right? So we'll go ahead and we'll give you 100% of the overhead from the human mind applied to there, and that's fine, but that means that a human being in a chair, a butt in a chair, consumes 40 kilowatt hours of energy in a year.
Okay.
Now, multiply this out by the number of human butts in the chair that AI is allegedly going to be as good as or better and therefore be able to replace. Let's just take the entire set of tech-related workers, according to the BLS, which is about 15 million people. Multiply that out now. Grok admitted, which is where it got itself skewered and ended up ultimately having to admit that Dettinger was right about tulips, that the current consumption of data centers in the United States, and we're just using U.S. here, we're not looking at the rest of the world, in the United States, the current consumption from data centers is approximately 500 terawatt hours. All right, so, you know, keeping your scale the same, the number of zeros is important. It doesn't take more than a few seconds with the calculator to realize that we are talking about 4 or 5 orders of magnitude greater energy consumption to replace humans with machines in this way.
Carl, can I gonna ask a question on some history? Maybe people don't even remember this, but you guys will, though. There was a time when the cloud, when instead of saying AI every other word on CNBC, you said cloud.
It was
right?
Cloud, right.
Well, there were, I think Microsoft, and Kevin probably knows more about this because it was going in where he used to live in, like Park Ridge or one of those places up north. They bought this huge piece of property, and Microsoft was going to build this massive center. And I remember reading at the time that it was going to consume 30 or 35% of all the electricity in Northbrook or Park Ridge or something for this
yeah.
place. And they were going to put 5 or 6 of them around the country, but that was going to be the first, I think. I don't think they ever finished it, Crowell, and I don't think they ever built any of the other ones, did they?
Well, some of the stuff, you know, I mean, obviously this stuff has to some degree been built, but remember that cloud was a little bit different thing in that when I took my... If I've got my computer at my house that is doing a particular task or in my business, and I put it in the cloud, I turned off the machine at the house. All right. So it's a shift. Yes, it's 35% of, you know, that particular area's drain. But what it did was concentrate the power consumption that was done in other places. And the argument, which, by the way, I argued is probably false because the externality costs, specifically with regards to security and things like this, as well as the fact that nobody works for free, that if you actually analyze this dispassionately, somebody's selling you a bill of goods. And people have found out over time that this is in fact true. These data breaches, and on top of that, the problems you have with, well, you know, this sounds really good from a cost perspective, right up until the company decides, oh, by the way, you know all that stuff you got over there that you built using our proprietary things, the price is going up 40% next.
Carl, how much is this? And I'm not, I know. I mean, I go back a ways in my history on this because when railroads first came out,
well, right.
they were valued essentially to the moon, and as
yeah,
soon
to
as
the
somebody,
moon, Alice, right.
Well, as soon as somebody got one running, the first day there was a train, they go, okay, how many cars you got? How much did you make? And you could do the math and the valuation change like instantly. The same thing happened with who was the first TV? Was it NBC? I think it was. They were to the sky in valuation, and the first day they actually started on TV and people found out how much a commercial was and how much it cost to make a show, immediately got valued as a regular going concern and not this you can't even imagine how much you're going to make kind of thing. Same thing sort of happened with the cloud, right? Same thing.
Well, yes and no. The cloud thing is so what ended up happening with the cloud thing, and this ought to frighten you, because this is where the crash comes from, and it is going to happen, because what occurred with the cloud thing, notice how you can't actually buy, for example, accounting software for your business anymore?
Well, you got to rent it, right?
Well, yeah. Okay, so, you know,
monthly or an annual fee.
Right. So, by the way, if I bought when I was running MCS for a long period of time, we used QuickBooks for at least for part of our internal stuff. Okay. Why? Because it did what we needed it to do, and you bought it once and it sat on your computer, and then you know, if you paid for upgrades, you got more features, right? You got more stuff over time, but you didn't have to buy the upgrades if what it was doing before was perfectly suitable to whatever it is you needed. So you had to make the argument as the manufacturer every year when you came out with a new version, you had to sell me the new version, because there had to be something in there that made it worth it for me to fork up the other couple hundred dollars or whatever it was. All right, now that's gone.
Well, also, if you happen to be a in this administration, or in anybody's in the last five, the thought of any kind of antitrust, the second you see something where nobody can buy anything, it all is all going to be leased to you. If that's not a red flag for monopoly, I don't know what is.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, but nobody cares about that. Nobody's cared about that for, you know, 40 years.
Right,
so, I mean,
since Reagan.
Well, I'm just saying, the entire medical system exists today only because of violations of that law. So, I mean, you know, as it stands. But the thing is that what we have now is a proliferation of people who believe across industries, I don't care where it comes from, across industries, that you can take something that is 5,000 times the cost of operation in thermodynamic terms, in energy terms, as a human, throw the human out of work, and this is going to pencil. And oh, by the way, unless you're going to kill the human, you're going to have all of the other things that the human had to have still exist, whether he has the job or not. All right, so all those other expenditures are still there.
No, we could just let him. We could just let him die.
Well, or kill it.
Yeah.
Well, or kill it. Okay. Yeah. But the thing is, short of erasing the human from the planet, you don't even get the one in 5,000 back on the rest of the overhead, right? So this is a problem in that all of these projections, all this pricing that you see today in asset markets, and it's not just in stocks, it's everywhere. All of it is predicated on this penciling out. And this is one of the things, last year when I was off chasing full colors, I noticed all of this fiber being deployed because I know what I'm looking at when I'm, you know, driving around. I see it on the rural side of the road on a telephone pole.
Doesn't take long for you to get to rural where you are.
Well, no, I mean, this was up north. This wasn't all here. Right. This was in another part of the country. But I saw
up north to you is southern Indiana.
Yeah, bite me. So I saw this and I said, "There's no." It's what I've done my entire professional life is build data networks, right? So I mean, I'm looking at this going, "How does this pencil? It can't pencil. There's no way it does." And then and of course, the conspiracy-minded thing comes into the back of my head. Well, wait a minute, is Biden essentially stealing money from everybody and giving it to all these utilities? And that's the only way this thing works. And I'm like, okay, that sounds nice to put the glass on the pole, but by the way, you have to power all this electronics. You have to replace it when there's, when something happens, some drunk hits a telephone pole and knocks it down, whatever. I'm like, Build yes, operate no, still doesn't pencil.
Carl, for a total Luddite, when we talk about AI, I'm sure there's all these machinery type applications that you and Kevin know about. For a dunce like me, I kick up M2 Money Supply, and there's this AI there going to tell me what it is. But I scroll down five lines, and I get the Fed number, and I put up the chart like I always did. I mean, are there people that are just too lazy to... I mean, it's nowhere near the same as having to walk down to the... I mean, the incremental is not walking down to the library to get the number versus getting it on your computer. The incremental is five lines, and it might not even be correct. Is that... all you that know important?
What,
I mean,
you know what it's good for now? It's good as a work saver.
Except you have to validate everything. So this.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. But Carl, I don't have to validate some stuff. Let me give you an example, because I'm not looking for answers. I'm looking for some basics. I'm developing a course. It's called Supply Chain Technologies. When I teach, I like having a case that runs all the way through the course, so that okay. I can keep piling on assignments about it. So for me to go out to just ChatGPT and say, "Here's a few parameters, create a company for me," you know, an imaginary company. I don't care what the industry is; it just has to have, you know, distribution. It has to have manufacturing. It has to have, and I tell it, and in a minute, I have this. It would have taken me several hours to pull together a similar case.
Absolutely.
It's just a nice little workaround.
No, wait.
To me, that's the state of the art right now.
I understand that, Kevin, but here's the problem. In 5 hours for you to do this, as opposed to, you know, 5 minutes for the AI, right? The problem is, on an energy balance perspective, it used 200 times as much energy as you would have.
And yet I got paid the same.
Okay.
Are you commenting, is Kevin a 20-watter or is he more or less?
Well, I'm just saying, but see, here's the problem. Today you were paid the same, Kevin. All right. Tomorrow you don't get paid at all.
Well, so I'm gonna walk into class and he's not gonna be there?
So, but I guess, you know, what I'm telling you is I'm not arguing with your math, because, you know, it makes sense and it sounds solid to me. So I'm not arguing with that. But I am, you know, what I am saying is it's a useful tool. Is it useful enough to, does it have the financial justification? Good question.
Well, this is,
for me, The other thing is that I have very little bandwidth for any of this kind of stuff, personal bandwidth. So, you know, I like having the shortcut because I can't keep up with everything I have to do anyway.
Kevin, okay. how do you get into this? A very Luddite question. How did you do that? You actually went to ChatGPT and said, "Create me a company that does this."
Yeah, you just go there.
You put the prompt in, and it gives you back the, you know, what it grinds on it for however long, and it gives you back the results.
And it'll you can ask clarifying questions or say, you know, please add this in. It's a useful tool. Forget the economics of it and all that. It's a very useful tool. It turns out too, on if you're using any of these, you know, Perplexity or Grok or any of them, be polite, say please. You know, it seems to do better when you do that.
Well, here's the thing. At the end of the day, you didn't pay the cost of the operation of the thing. It was externalized onto other people, and this is where, you know, Chief, you and I, we've gone back and forth on this, and this is what I've pointed out is the problem. You take, you know, oh my God, these, you know, it's going to be the horrible of horribles if we force people to pay, you know, American wages for whatever, right? Or if we say you can't make someone else pay another person's medical bill, then the result will be that person dies. BS. And the reason we know that is because the company will obviously make less money, but if they can't sell to more than 0.5% of the population at the price they're charging today without the externality shift, they're not going to go out of business voluntarily if they can make a profit at the at what people can actually afford to pay. All right, so it, those would be their options, either lower the price, therefore their profitability gets hit, but they don't fail because it is a profitable transaction, or voluntarily cease to exist. The second is not going to happen. So the problem here...
Carl, just to embellish your example a little bit, what you're saying is my externality was I saved several hours, but somebody's given that data center a tax break.
By the way, you know...
Well, not only that, not only did somebody give the data center a tax break, my power bill went up 10%.
By the way, you know who invented that term that you guys are bandying about, an externality?
Mm.
A guy named Ronald Coase.
Oh, okay.
He just croaked, but like 95. He actually was finished his career at the University of Chicago, and he wrote a landmark piece of economic theory that was incredible for its day, and it had to do with all the stuff about hospitalization, other kind of crap.
Right.
Basically, it was a very simple thing. A factory moves into a small town in Britain, and all of a sudden, everybody likes the idea. There's now jobs and blah, blah, blah. But the factory belched out smoke. And, you know, right. He wasn't going to go into whether people ended up croaking lung cancer and all that kind of stuff. But basically, back in those days, you had to whitewash your fence every 5 years. But now,
every 2 years.
It was every right. 2 or 3 years. And he goes, this is a cost that now everybody has to take on themselves that really is a cost that the factory should be paying people for, but they don't.
But
so
they
he
don't,
called
right.
it an economic externality. You could take some of your cost of production and give it to other people. It's like pouring crap in a river 10 years from now. Everybody else pays to clean it up.
Yeah, the difference is it's done by force.
Yeah, and right. now it's the same. It's the same. That's what a lot of people like to do. Is to throw all their costs of a place onto somebody else, right?
Well, of course, but the problem with it in the current context is that, you know, there was a lot of this kind of hype around the internet back when I was running my company. Okay, the internet.
Yeah, you think? 2000 crash? Yeah, gee.
Well, duh, right? Yeah. But the fundamental and the thing is that there were areas that were clearly not going to go away. However, my skill set didn't lie in those specific smaller pieces of the whole. That's not what I was good at. I knew this. So rather than try to do something I wasn't good at, I did what I was good at. Okay. Ultimately, the staying power from the original, you know, internet craze was that the movement of information at dramatically higher speeds and at lower costs was what stuck. Okay. Now, we then got, you know, all kinds of other crazy stuff, like all the social media and everything else today. But that none of that existed at the time. None of that was even a glint in someone's eye.
We had, who had the groups? Was it Yahoo or Google?
There were a bunch, but it was kind of an outgrowth. I mean, some of it actually was an outgrowth of bulletin board systems, and I wrote software that did that back in the early 1980s. All right, so I mean, this boy, you want to talk about, you know?
Well, I mean, I know if you went on there and it was there were trader groups, but if you were a civil engineer group, there were guys that specialized in.
That was Usenet.
Yeah. Okay.
That was Usenet.
Okay.
And Usenet grew out of the bulletin board concept. And the interconnection, I wrote software was one of the first ones to actually.
Is all that gone now? And everybody connects like through Facebook or something?
No, it's not gone, but I don't know that it's used much anymore. Although I think it still does actually exist. It's just that the model became so essentially the model was you passed data in batches to other people that you were connected to, and it was a spoke. It was not really a hub and spoke because there was no real hub. Anybody could become a hub. So it was kind of a mesh sort of thing. But there was an awful lot of duplication of transmission because you know, if I had a repository, if you were a customer of mine, you were hitting my repository. Well, that meant I had to keep it up to date. Okay, so that was, you know, and this was done in a batch format with compression and everything else across all these different sites.
Well, but a lot of it was, you know, driven by crazy, you know, sex and all kinds of stuff. But really, there was a group that, you know, of the 400 people around the world, you know, designing power treatment plants or water treatment plants. That's where those guys chatted with each other about what they were doing back and forth, right?
Oh yeah, and I mean, one of the perversions that happened, which, you know, gee, go figure, yeah. You know, perversion in any kind of a human system, right? One of the perversions that happened is that this originally was a textual medium. All right, so, you know, you were having conversations with people in a text format. This was before you had graphical displays. So, you know, people were using terminals, dumb terminals, you know, 80 column by 24 terminals. And that's, you know, was when I started doing this sort of stuff. Well, the minute that you got the ability to actually, you know, when Windows showed up and the Macintoshes and things like this, as soon as that happened, the two areas of traffic ended up being 95% of the volume, even though they were, in terms of value, 2% of the value. And that was stolen software. Basically, people just ripped it off the disks and put it up there in pieces, broke it up into pieces that would pass through the system and, you know, posted it. And the other one was, big shock, scans from Girly magazines.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so, and of course, the CD underside of that was that an awful lot of it, well, let's just say alt binaries, pictures, preteen, doesn't take much imagination to figure out what's in there.
But always, if there's something I haven't heard of in a long time, alt binary, wow.
All right, so, I mean, we refuse to carry that stuff because from my point of view, that was soliciting felonies.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind, you know, going to prison. But here's the thing. Here was the amazing part of it, Chief. Out of all of this, despite that you, the fact that you actually had to allocate storage for this, and it was 90% of your storage and transport to carry the stuff, all of it illegal, 90%, I couldn't get a single prosecutor.
Oh no,
interested in actually going after it.
Well, it's like now, if an old lady gets whacked on the head and somebody takes her purse, you're going to get 5 policemen. If you can find a squad car, if you stop one and said the machine and the Tripoli tap, which it doesn't, by the way, you stole $500 of my bank account, they say, why is that my problem, and drive off. And
it's an interesting
world we're in.
Well, yeah, I mean, you take a look at this thing with Epstein, you know, there's no prosecutable felonies that we have within the data set that we've got, supposedly, according to the FBI, the DOJ now. This was the latest, you know, piece of tripe that came out of these people. By the way, a couple of months ago, they said they had something on the order of several terabytes of child pornography. They said it will not be released because it is all child pornography.
I don't.
Okay. So explain to me how you get child pornography without, number one, a child.
Yeah.
Number two, an adult doing something to said child that is illegal.
I don't. We talked about this a while ago, and I don't want to go through the whole thing, but someplace, somewhere, one of the listeners sent me some dude, and you can take off on this, some dude was able to, through public access, was able to chart all the phone numbers of people who made phone calls. Evidently, wherever this island was, he had a place in Florida, but he had also this island, which is all the nasty stuff.
Right.
But you had to land on another island, right? And then he took the boat over to the bad island. You know, and the guy's got this big graphics thing where all the little orange dots, all these idiots who not only were perverts, made phone calls on the boat between where the plane landed and the other place. So you could get their phone numbers. And, well, this guy was not going to publish them. But they came back to the U.S., and he traced them to where essentially they lived. Fortunately, well, for me, I guess, Chicago's had its own problems, but nobody's from Chicago. There are like 7 or 8 from New York, a few from Detroit, a bunch in Dallas, a lot in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and what and Carl maybe can explain to us, you can't trace anything like that in Europe. But here,
this guy couldn't
get the numbers. He could not.
You can't do it publicly using public data in Europe.
Yeah. Right. But here you can.
Yes, you can trace it in Europe, but just not.
Well, somebody can, but he couldn't.
But not you, right.
Yeah. And so it's not like we don't know who went there.
Right. Oh, they know.
You know, it's if you look at, some people are always very disappointed when I say, you can't invent a new fetish. They've already been invented before. They're like. But, you look at most of that stuff, and I have a pulse. Some of it you say, gee, I guess that was a little more limber. That looks like fun. it could be fun. I the idea of looking at somebody young like that, what does anybody, when I was 18, I liked the movie stars that were 35. I mean, I don't, what is the motivation for somebody wanting somebody young? I don't get that.
Well,
there's nothing there that has ever even remotely appealed to anybody I know. I don't think.
Well, okay. So there is a tremendous difference between a sexually mature young person and children.
Well,
they're not the same. Okay, and one does in fact link to it, at least theoretically anyway, a level of biological imperative. If we don't reproduce, we cease to exist, right? However, the second has no possible connection to that. It's just somebody's wired in a way is defective, I suppose, would be a way to look at it.
Yeah,
But the thing is that what bothers me about all of this stuff connected together is that at the end of the day, to a large degree, it's all the same sort of thing. And the funny thing about it was that Grok, tried to defend this stuff with the AI, game, right? And the valuations. The guy that fed this into there, he's got an account. So he took my riposte, including the math, and fed it back into Grok and said, oh, by the way, because Grok called my original article reductive, which I thought was kind of amusing. And so then he fed that back into there. And at the end of the day, the next place it tried to go was, well, the real issue here is that the power consumption that is going into this is being driven by fossil fuels, which means it'll drive climate change. Which is complete crap, has absolutely nothing to do with, that's not, I didn't even raise that as a potential part of the argument, because first off, I don't believe in the so-called AGW thing. But secondly, even if I did, that's not the point. And, there's no reason to go there. Then,
I love where you're going on this, but.
But Chief, when at the end of the day, do you know what it did? It agreed.
Well,
that this was digital tulips.
I get what I'm saying is what's driving these valuations? And by the way, if we ever, you accused me rightfully of saying that at one time I thought there was a chance we could grow into this. By the way, that's if I thought that was the right way to do it, 100%. 3 years ago when we first had this discussion. I'm down to about 60. So, I'm every
it's
day.
Not, it's not possible.
Yeah, all I said was it's worth a try.
And I'm not saying it wouldn't be a nice idea. It would be a nice idea.
But every day as the stuff goes higher and higher, I don't. I really don't.
Chief, with five orders of magnitude, you can't grow into it.
I love the people on the show because. They put up with my mind wanderings, because I've had a bunch of different things I've done in my life. I was at Allied. I did some stuff. I did small business stuff at Pullman. I did all the estimates, and I did all those kinds of things. And I got to talk to people that were borderline geniuses in every spot, engineers and stuff, with an education that you couldn't have paid for. I can only imagine if you were there sucking up these people's ideas. I mean, you're worse than me at it. Or you like to do it more than me. And you get kind of a rounded stuff on this stuff that we're all kind of matches together. And I just, when I saw the Lakers go for a $10 billion market cap, and I saw them making $200 million a year,
yeah,
and I sit there and go,
how?
I can't imagine, you know, even if I put my best suit on, me going in and giving that presentation and talking about revenue and talking about this and that, and all of a sudden, by the way, you guys should pay $10 billion. I don't know how I could get there from here. I mean, unless your view of the world is so different. I'll, clearly, when everybody came back from World War II, you couldn't almost imagine the incredible increases. Everybody wanted a washing machine. Everybody, you and I would have erred on the other side. Okay, well, everybody needs a car. Everybody, but you look at this, and I look at, I mean, I go, okay, I don't care if NVIDIA makes $3 a year. Okay, P.E. ratio I've never really looked at. The one I always zero in on is what's the revenue? What's $6?
Right.
Okay, so if this is the world's best company and they double next year and they double next year and they double next year, we're still up to, well, doubles 12, doubles 24. We're still talking, you know, how many times revenue? We're still talking 8 times revenue, which is kind of a lot. But the thing that I look at is that I'm not going to argue with somebody that NVIDIA doesn't have it all figured out. Maybe they do. And maybe Oracle does. And maybe Microsoft does. And I can name maybe seven others that look to me like they're hitting on all cylinders. Yet, I know that if all 10 of these things double and triple their revenue in 5 years, the world's going to look a lot different than it does now. It's got to be funny money. It's got to be something, because they're all too big to do that together, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and this is, and the thing is that the problem with that view of the world and how it will shake out in the end is that when you have that kind of thing going on, the only reason it even works in the short term is that someone else is being forced to eat the costs. They're being shoved down other people's throats. And this is, you know, you can look at this in the medical system and say, well, they got away with it for the last 40 years. Why would you think it can't go on?
Well, that's right. I mean, TV, they're going to say, if you're right, you've been here every month for the last 5 years and it hasn't happened yet.
By the way, you know, I've been buying puts because of what you've told me, and I'm broke.
Yeah.
Yes, that's, you know, I mean, I've been raising a stink about this because mathematics is an absolute science. It is not subject to feelings. And all the way back to when I was running my internet company, I saw where this was going and where it was going to lead from a standpoint of fiscal sustainability. And the fact that when you shove this down people's throats, what ultimately ends up happening is you destroy their standard of living. Now, that you get when you get away with it the way we've quote unquote gotten away with it thus far, which is by emitting more and more credit and shoving more and more externalities on it, you know, people say, well, this is the divide between the wealthy and the not-so, right? Okay, true as far as it goes. But the truth is that it's much more insidious than that, because the thing is, there is a distribution between those people who are really good at doing things and those people who are not so good, all right? And
well, look what helps. Look what helps.
And the outcomes are not going to be the same between somebody who is a rocket scientist and somebody whose best and highest use is digging ditches.
Well, I'm going to say the person who...
That's reality. Yeah.
Well, I would say that, I mean, a person, just say, a person who might have bought the Doral 10 years ago and has a mortgage.
Right.
He's happy as a clam with what he's doing.
Yeah.
Just like the farm owners in Germany in Weimar Republic loved it because they got to pay their mortgage off in 6 months with money that was worth nothing. We're going the same. But the problem is we got a guy like that in charge and thinks it's good for everybody or doesn't care about everybody else.
Well, I would argue that the obvious reason for this is that this has nothing, you know, it has nothing to do with whether or not it's good for everybody else, okay? By the way, the latest, I don't know if you saw the thing out from Navarro this morning, made me choke on my espresso, spat it all over the keyboard. basically, well, you know, the CBO was wrong the last time Trump was in office, and they're wrong now because they're partisan hacks and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know what grates me about this? And it did when Obama was in office and when Biden was in office. And, you know, and people were yelling about the CBO's numbers then and everything else. You realize the CBO is not yes, they're a nonpartisan agency, blah, 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 blah. But their methodology and the way that they do their calculations is set by law.
We don't like the law, we're going to change it, bud.
Well, but the point, Chief, is that they know. I mean, you think these people, after having done these runs for the last, you know, however many years, and they know that they're always BS, that they always overstate the revenue that the government will get and understate the expense side, okay? And the reason is the CBO's law that creates it and it operates under requires them to treat every expense that is listed to expire as it will expire and stop, and that every tax that is listed that has an expiration date will expire. It'll never be extended. Any tax break will expire. Okay? It is, you cannot, you know, you take a look at, for example, the Medicare doc fix that gets passed every single year.
We're going to have to dash off the break here. Also, would like you to opine a little bit on when you have an emergency tariff ability by the executive branch that was given to him by Congress, is prosecuting his right-wing buddy down in Brazil, is that an emergency?
If a bunch of four-letter words came out of my mouth when
that's,
I saw that
SP Futures down 39, NASDAQ Futures down 128. Well, it was like, was it Bush Sr. or Obama? You know, we have a war on terror. Okay, we were at war until we declare every single terrorist is done. It's like war against bad guys. We get to stay. We'll never declare that, but it could be 5 decades, and until we find the last bad guy, we got a war on bad guys, right? I mean,
yeah, it was essentially the same game right after 9/11. Yeah.
We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Al. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 38, kind of where we've been all morning. Same way with the NASDAQ down 120. That's why I haven't been piping in a little too much because we're kind of down across the board. Individual stocks, we've got JP Morgan down 2. Nothing really crazy. A lot of them are up yesterday. A lot of the retailers are up for some reason. Home Depot and a lot of those. Caterpillar was up a bunch yesterday. It's been very uneven across the board, which, you know, is you see these days up and down and stuff is really kind of all over the place. The Dow's down 278. Like I said, there's not. Well, Goldman Sachs is down 6. They're in the Dow. JP Morgan down 2. So a little bit on the banks. Their earnings are going to start, I believe, next week. I think that's what Kenny said the other day. Why don't you give us a traffic weather sports? I've got so much stuff up here, my machine is gagging.
Absolutely. Good morning, right, Chief. It's currently 7:33 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at about 71 degrees right now with a high of 86. Humid with clouds and sun shower today in the morning, and then also a heavy storm in the afternoon. Tonight will be breezy, mostly cloudy, humid, and a possible heavy thunderstorm tonight as well with a low of 74 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 110. Mostly sunny and very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 86 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, so looking at 25 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 39 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 35 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 24 to the Den Ryan, 26 minutes. Talk about MLB real quick. Cubs beat Twins yesterday, 8-1, and Diamondbacks lose to Padres, 3-4. Guardians and White Sox had to postpone the game yesterday, July 11th, to today, July 11th. So we have a doubleheader today for Guardians and White Sox playing twice today. One's at 2:10 p.m. and the other one at 7:10 p.m. Cubs at Yankees today as well at 6:05 p.m. Lastly, Diamondbacks at Angels at 8:38 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
I cannot believe that the White Sox are going to try and pull off two separate crowds today for these two games.
Wow, what are you thinking, man? Do you think?
Well, I mean, you have to leave the. Who's going to leave at 4 o'clock and come back at 7?
Yeah, that's true. I think you're going to have to pick and choose.
I think they're out of their mind, but that's just them. Dax down 235. That's a full 1%. FTSE down 47.5%. CAC around down 80. That's a full 1%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down only 76.2%. Hang Seng's actually up 111.4. Shanghai up 50 cents. Trump's hitting Canada with these 35% tariffs. I think people in China are happy about that. They're probably going to do more trade with Canada. A 10-year up 4 basis points, 4.39. The Bund unchanged, 2.67. Japan up 3 basis points, 1.53. High for those guys. Oil up 74 cents, 67.31. We've got gold with a rally here, up $32, 33.57. Silver up a whole dollar. That's 2.7%. 38.32. That's going to be close to a high on silver. We've got crypto up 4,500. In crypto, it's okay. We're gonna bid up an artificial stock, so we're good with that. Foreign exchange, we got the euro at 117, kind of unchanged. We had the British pound at 135, so not much going on there. So, Carl, I mean, as people make these determinations, I can't believe people are giving 10-year deals to these basketball players or 7 deals or any kind of a clause in there. It says, what if the world goes to hell? Who's gonna pay somebody?
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I find astonishing about those kinds of transactions in the first place. When I was running MCS, we got a hell of a deal on real estate downtown, and it was such a good deal. On our office space that I would have liked as long a period of time as I could get on the lease. Let's put it that way. Longer is better. But even there's a problem, right? I mean, what happens if you go out far enough, what happens if there's an economic paradigm shift that all of a sudden I don't need the space to put 40 butts in seats, I only need the space to put 10 butts in the seat?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, and you say, well, that's never going to happen. Oh, really? Right? I mean, you know, I always, any time that somebody does that over a long enough period of time, and then there is no escape hatch. There is no, in economic conditions escape or a buyout at some reasonable price or, you know, I get it from a standpoint of the player. All right, I mean, if you think about it, all it takes is one ripped Achilles.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, that's not an injury you ever recover 100% from, all right? Yes, you do recover. Yes, they could do surgery. Yes, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. However, as somebody who hyperextended both of mine but didn't tear them when I trying to play Superman when I was a teenager, boys never do that, right? You
right.
cannot die. That was skiing, by the way, that I did that. To this day, 61, if I push too hard with running and such, they get tweaked. And I know what happens if I rip one.
Yeah, it's a long, long comeback from that.
Well, and it's never 100%. Okay, so I mean, you can get 90 maybe of what you had before, but never 100. And by the way, the risk of a second event, the second one probably being catastrophic and unrepairable, is very real. That puts you out of the sport, whatever it is. All right. So, I mean, from an athlete's point of view, all of these, any kind of professional sports has a risk of serious injury somewhere along the way.
But we're trying to value businesses that are growing, these football, basketball, baseball to a certain extent. And one of the reasons why they're growing is we're making it absurdly easy to gamble, and we're basically saying there's no problem with the morals gambling anymore, even though we used to think it was a bad thing if
right.
If everybody knew all that was gambling on games. And yet, then we turn around and that's the growth that we're going to tax all these people on, and we try and screw the gambling industry by only deducting 90% of the stuff.
Well, now, that was even... Yeah, that one was really amusing. And I didn't know that was the, you know, it's interesting because I actually read through most of this bill before it was passed. All right. I mean, and part of the reason was that there were some provisions in there that I thought were kind of interesting. And incidentally, the blowback from some of the parliamentarian rulings are going to be really, really amusing to watch. For example, in the Senate version of the bill was a striking of short-barreled rifles and suppressors from the National Firearms Act. Okay, not what we ended up with, which is setting the tax to zero, but actually striking them from the bill. All right. Now, if you think about it, requiring someone to pay a tax in order to buy a muffler is about as stupid as it gets. But that's what's in there as it stands right now in the law. So, I mean, you know, nobody would say you have to pay a tax in order to have a muffler on your car, but you can have a car with no muffler and not pay the tax. Okay, I mean, duh.
Well, you're supposed to get a ticket if you have one with no muffler, but who knows if that happens anymore?
Well, who knows if that, yeah, I mean, these days, you know, around here, you know, rolling coal and louder is better, and yeah, all right, you know, we have a little hillbilly around here every now and then.
We have we have no police force here. By the way, there was a shooting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon the other day on the Dan Ryan.
Yeah.
And they interviewed this guy, and he goes, it's really terrible, but you know what? It's Chicago. And I'm going, there is an attitude.
Well, Chief, you know, there was, just the other day, there was a video posted on my forum that of a bunch of, shall we say, ethnically challenged individuals, I think it was in Philadelphia, that decided they were going to play with their giggle switches over the July 4th holiday. All right. And of course, there's, you know, 400 people out in the middle of the road having a good time, and all of a sudden the guns come out and everybody starts shooting everybody. Now, these guys are such terrible shots that I don't think they actually hit anyone. All right. Which is, that's the good news.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about that. Mere possession of that device is a 10-year in prison felony. You don't even have to shoot the gun. Just having one of those is a 10-year federal offense. And if you want to know where a huge part of the problem comes from, you know, all these gangbangers are running around these days, they've all got those things on their blocks because they're not that hard to make. Every one of those people earned themselves 10 years in the slammer before they pull the weapon. And yet we don't prosecute anybody for any of that stuff.
Now,
how many of those guys would be shooting someone if they were cooling their jets in a federal jail?
I never thought I would be a law and order dude, but I always felt that the people who are law abiding, their rights are higher than the people who, if you live in a bad neighborhood and your 10-year-old daughter can't go down to the store, if they have to have a machine gun nest to make sure that she can go down to the, that's her right. You can't take her right away from her because you don't want to, because you're so worried about harming the other guys.
Yeah, there comes a point at which, and I don't know where it is, but there comes a point at which the reasonable people out there are going to say, all right, that's enough of this BS. We're not putting up with it anymore. And by the way, it's now a free fire zone, and if you don't like it, you being the police,
well, I don't,
you're next.
I don't see how, as we build the world's biggest military for ICE, going after a lot of people, it don't seem. I'm driving home last night, and every night I drive home, and I never see a policeman. So this guy, there's a, you know, an arrow. We're supposed to wait in line for the arrow. Of course, some guy with the blacked out windows and stuff blows around the whole thing.
Right.
Doesn't care if he kills somebody in front. And then he's kind of pissed off because he couldn't get a parking place, and he pulls over. Well, down comes the window, and I see this guy, and it's, you know, about what you'd expect. And I'm thinking, okay, he went through a red light. He did this. He's got the windows that are tinted way too much.
Right.
How somebody doesn't pull him over, say, get the bleep out of the car, and let's see if there's a gun in there.
Yep.
And how we don't figure out how you don't do that is beyond me. And yet, because we probably have in Chicago 15, 20, 25 cars every night driving around with no good. Three or four guys in there armed looking for trouble.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't find a way to deal with it, I mean, that's why people are leaving the city in droves. And the weird part is the good people are leaving, not the bad people.
Well, of course, because the bad people just they don't care. They're not doing productive things. And by the way, even though they're not doing productive things, they still get the Gibbs because the EBT card gets reloaded every first of the month.
Well, I just my view, and it's kind of a, you know, sort of a, sometimes it's a simple view of the world, sometimes it's not, Carl. I look at like the city here, which is very obvious what is going on between, you know, one side of the aisle doing some stuff and the other side of the aisle doing some stuff. And you could, if you just walked around the loop, or if I drove you through a couple of neighborhoods here, which, you know, you probably haven't been through in a while, the first thing you're going to do is look at how unemployable just about everybody looks like.
Right.
So for some stooge in Washington to say in order to get Medicare, you got to work 20 hours a week, where?
Now wait. This, by the way, was a Bill Clinton policy.
Okay, but, you know, but a lot has changed since then.
I understand that, but here's the thing. It's not just work. I can go take classes I don't have to pay for.
There's no
learn to weld or whatever.
Look at the condition of the group you're talking about.
I understand this, but then look, if that's going to be the way that they choose to live, and that's what it is.
Okay.
Why do I have to pay their medical bill?
The one side says go do this or die, basically. And by the way, there's no job for anybody for 20 hours. Where the hell would you even go to find a job? Anyway, now the other side is, there's no problem. Let's just keep pouring more money in it that, by the way, our people steal before it gets to them.
Oh, right.
But, so somewhere, neither one of those, to me, is a solution. There's something else where me and guys from the conservative side and a couple of guys, that we can sit in a room and say, okay, what do we really have to do to change this? And guess what? Neither one of these solutions is the right one.
Well, the problem on the medical side is, as I pointed out, it's cost, and if it wasn't cost, then all of this transfer crap would be unnecessary. And yet, if you solve the cost problem, right?
I get
clearly,
that, but it's, I'm saying right now we have
okay,
30 people on these two blocks that look like they're pretty damn sick. They've probably been on drugs. There's no way they're working 20 hours. Now what are we going to do? Just cutting them off is not the deal. Throwing money at the community organizer is not the deal. What are we going to do? Is all I'm asking. I'm just asking a question.
All I'm saying is, if you don't address the problem, then all of these so-called solutions don't fix it.
I'm agreeing with you more on this esoterical, the drugs we're buying we're paying too much for. But the simple fact is, these people are not employable. I guess if we cut them off, In 6 months, half of them will be dead, and it's less of a problem. Also, don't like the idea of winging money at the community organizer, who seems to be driving around in a damn nice car, and nobody at Belome's getting the dough. So what we're seeing, we're choosing between two solutions, neither one of which, to me, is palatable.
You're choosing between two solutions because you don't want to take on the actual problem. Well, neither do you. And by the way, not just you, neither do any of the political
parties. I actually wouldn't mind taking on the problem. I do it in a small area and see what we could do to help.
You don't have to. Look, when you've got a law that's been on the books for over 100 years, and if you enforced it tomorrow, or in the case of the illegal labor and all of this, it's been on the books since the 1950s, so that's 70 years. If you actually enforced those laws, the problem would correct itself almost immediately.
If we enforced the laws against anybody who did an illegal combination trade, if we don't enforce the laws more on the upper end than we do the lower end.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you're not getting any argument here. Look. The problem with not doing it and just pouring more money at the issue, or handing more Gibbs out to community organizers or whatever have you, okay, it doesn't matter. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a scam. It's just going to different people.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's your friends get the dough. It's okay.
Yeah, your buddy gets the dough. The other guy gets screwed. Doesn't matter. All right. And it you know, you can choose how you couch it, but that's what it boils down to when you analyze it. The problem with doing that is that you take a look at, for example, Centene. You know those guys, right? Yeah. You've seen, you saw the stuff on them, CNC. Okay? They got destroyed 50% basically over the course of the last few days, because in the medical system, they're very heavily involved in the Medicare and Medicaid capitation stuff, and they got their heads cut off. Well, okay, now take a look at other parts of the economy and tell me what happens if asset prices go down in a day by 50%.
It happens
once
in a
while. Don't tell me it can't happen, because yes, it can.
They used to call it the trap door.
It's the elevator that some guy is up there with a big pair of bolt cutters and he cuts the cable after you get in.
Well, we've seen, by the way, did you get the call on the copper tariff the other day?
Another one of those.
Up 60 cents? I would have liked to cut. I'd have taken a two lot. A two lot's 25 grand. I could do that.
I was going to say, I kind of would have enjoyed having a little futures position there on that one, right?
What do you suppose would happen if somebody actually had access? I'm not saying, I sure don't. Somebody had access to all the people who bought futures the day before, and there were four or five big names on there, and it somehow dropped in a newspaper somewhere. You think anybody even care? Congress
would
even care?
We seem to have either an intelligence agency or basically the entire federal government so permeated with people that like to diddle little kids that we can't know who was in any of those videos of, 3 terabytes worth of stuff.
Yeah, it's a. We had with the shooting on the Ryan. How many people have made how much money on all the cameras, or every single license number that drives on the Ryan is somehow in the cloud someplace, or AI, or some damn where, you know where. And every time there's a problem, we can't find anybody.
Because nobody looks, and nobody wants to look. We have more. That's the thing, is there's more cameras today, private and public, than ever before. And yet, how come the clearance rate hasn't improved much?
Well, we had an incident last weekend in my garage. Somebody broke in my garage, or went over the fence. Actually, the garage was open, so I guess. But let's say, went over the locked gate, so I guess that's breaking in, right?
That's burglary, yeah.
And went in the garage door, and then opened the big door and was looking around in there. Now, there were three guys, one with a backpack, so there wasn't a car. So they weren't looking for, like, bikes or... it didn't look like the group that wanted a 3/4-inch socket set, right? Put it in their backpack. But they went through my truck, because I have police plates, and or the police... the place you give money to help guys buy new vests, the Patrolman's Association.
Right.
So it looks like I'm a policeman, but I'm not. So they went through the glove compartment under the seat looking for a gun, probably. Or a laptop, with none of which
probably,
I had.
Probably, yeah. Probably a gun. Yeah.
So then they went down two doors, went over that guy's fence, couldn't get in their garage, and then the end of the block, somebody... And I have them on video, and the guy next door has them on video. So I call the police, and I go, look, these guys are, doing this to the garage down the alley. Well, I guess you could bring those videos in, but, the enthusiasm was such. Tell you what, how about if I just mention it at the next police cap meeting? And I go... You do that. I mean, what the hell?
I'll tell you how you solve that, Chief. And people don't want to do this, but this is how we fix essentially all this stuff. That cop you talk to has a name. Okay?
Yeah.
So, you put his name on blast on the show, and you suggest that everybody that listens not just boycotts him, but every member of his family. You won't even sit in a pew at church with the guy. If he comes in and he sits down, you get up and you move over to the next one. He comes into a bar where you're having a beer, you check, please, you're out. You make those people such pariahs in the community. And the same thing with physicians and all these people. Oh, no, we can't, there's nothing we can do.
There's no...
BS.
I think... because I used to work in a manufacturing facility, I know what costs are. I think you can't just, if it were me, and this is coming from the outside, I actually think the new superintendent here is doing a pretty good job, but the chief of police, but the, if it were me, I'd say, all right, look, we got all these I use the term petty things. People stealing a car, not always getting hurt. We can't investigate all of them. But here's what I want to do. Put 100 of them on a desk. Every 10th one, let's look into. Or every 8th one or something. My buddy Monty, there's a oil change place right by me on North Avenue. You probably know where it is. It's just, you know, it's just a regular Jiffy Lube. So the guy goes in. He's got a pretty nice car. And the guy gets done with his oil change, pulls it out front. And he pays the guy, and he walks out, and he goes, "Hey, where the hell's my car?" The guy goes, "What do you mean? What do you mean? We put it right out front." Well, of course, you know,
someone stole it.
Yeah, three gentlemen. Now, there's not even a place to park on North Avenue. Three guys, in the middle of the day, see the car sitting there. One guy jumps out, runs in, turns left on North Avenue. Obante, the next stop was going to be the gas station. So he's got one of those cars, not like me, you know, it's got a needle. This thing actually tells you how many miles you got left, and he's got like two.
Right.
So they get on Elston. The guy must have said, "Oh, bleep, this thing doesn't have any gas."
There's no gas in it.
So he pulls into the back of this concrete company, just out of the way of this cameras. Of course, we got the obligatory hoodie and mask on, you know, the uniform of people. Anybody who's got that uniform on during the day, I think she gets stopped, but that's just me. So the guy takes off. Now, Monty calls the police, and of course they busted the... did something to the steering column, right? Well, they took the keys.
Oh, okay.
So to get a new key, like a new Lexus, like $400.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just go to Ace Hardware with the other one, the guy make you one. You got to get one from, you know. So, and plus his wife's all pissed off because the guy has a key to their house, but there's no address on there, so no big deal. Now, you would think, I would just bet that if you're like watching crime scene investigations on TV, if somebody showed up and dusted that steering wheel, you would find a fingerprint of somebody in the system, probably on probation.
Yep.
And you could go, if you tried. Now, maybe you got to, you know, I'm just saying 1 out of 10 times, you got to try. You can't say.
And you're not going to get them all the time. But no. You will get, but you know what? The fact that when you do this, you actually take a real risk of going to prison.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how well that actually controls people's behavior.
Plus, I think word would travel.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, do you think the crooks actually don't, you know, pay attention to the fact that, hey, listen, we just had a bunch of these dudes decide to shoot up, you know, this music release party thing in Chicago on the north side. And by the way, nobody's been arrested.
Well, I mean, we see it in you know, kind of all the way through society. There's no, but are we going to be able to pick? I guess the fork in the road is this way, Carl. Either we're going to have some type of a revaluation caused by something, or we're essentially going to go down the way of the Weimar Republic. Trump's going to have his way for the next 5 years. We're going to pour more and more in the thing, and a house is going to cost $600,000. Nobody's going to make it any more than they are now. Maybe a little bit. And everybody keeps talking about, I mean, this one lady, I was giving her a little bit of grief because she started talking about the CPI, and this is on Wednesday's show. She's talking about gasoline and food. I said, you know, when are people gonna stop talking about gasoline and food? I mean, it's the one you see every day, but it's not the one hanging around your body ready to stick you in the ass. It's the air conditioner repair bill that you don't know is tripled or doubled that you unless you had it fixed, you don't know. It's not the car repair bill. It's not the new car. What has to happen? How many people? Hell, I can't get people on the show to listen to me to pay attention. Why can't people understand basic economics and the single biggest people who benefit by inflation is both the government and people that own property like Trump.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not. He's not the only one. I mean, he's not even close to being the only one.
Well,
I mean, why don't people at least get that as who's the beneficiary and who isn't, and act accordingly? And yet, there's some people are so freaking conservative they don't. You can't even tell them that without them saying there's something wrong with you.
Oh, I know.
I know your political leanings where they are, but at least you'll listen to hey, you know the Jeep Cherokee you just bought for $100,000? By the way, the tax on that's $11,000 now. Who do you think's benefited on that, for God's sake?
Well, I mean, the thing, this thing that Elon is now, you know, why he wants to form a new political party. One of the dangers with stuff like this is, of course, what's driving his desire to do this is that his Gibbs are, got curtailed substantially in this bill that got passed. All right. Now, there were a lot of bad things that are in that bill. But the one good one is that now all of these fantasy pie-in-the-sky green energy things, which do not pencil on a physics perspective, on a thermodynamics perspective, it's not that they don't work. They work. They don't pencil on a cost perspective, okay? And they can't be made to pencil. And the reason is that their nameplate rating is not what you actually get out of them. And when you derate for what's actually deliverable, they're three times as expensive as what they're sold at.
Carl, let me ask you, we got to run over a minute here, but I got to ask you a very serious question. Chief to Carl, why, I think we won't have the debate now, we'll do it maybe Tuesday. I'm going to say that a real lot of Republicans are absolutely distasteful over the person who's now in office and what's going on. So I'm going to say he's got his 20-25% of people that whatever he does is okay, and I'm not going to criticize that.
Right.
And on the other side, I mean, I was a lifelong Democrat. I've voted for as many Republican presidents as Democrats, so I was never crazed on that side. That party has nothing for me, and virtually everybody who I think whoever was a Democrat with me looks at this progressive wing. And they go, what in God's name is that?
What is this?
And yet, and yet if somebody says, gee, if 60% of the people don't really like either party, how about a third one? Somebody goes after them with a bayonet. Why can't we have 10 people that get elected that don't have to vote the way their party tells them to vote? Why can't
we
do that?
Because that won't... All right, so having been involved in the political system on the third party side, fairly heavily, embedding myself in it intentionally and then ultimately leaving in disgust. The reason it doesn't work is that the only way it can work is you have to have an 80% issue or a couple of 80% issues, and the healthcare racket is one of them. You're never going to get a 100% issue with anybody, okay? That's never going to happen. And if you go after the medical system, the 20% that are employed by it are going to want your head. They're going to come out with a long knife.
I get all that. If you give
right?
me...
But if you can stay focused there, you can do it. The problem is they don't. And so you have, no matter where you go with this, you don't. And when you try to infiltrate, what's going to happen is no committee assignments of any kind.
Okay, we'll do this on Tuesday. I'm going to push back. If you have a House or a Senate right now that's 48-52, and you put five people in there to where... it's 47-48, and you. Who has all the power? You.
I understand where you're going with that and why.
You could end up to be the speaker.
No.
Because you promise. You promise committee assignments to the guys who will line up with you. They'll line up. They'll line up like a bunch of lapdogs.
It will not work that way, and it's just simply has to
If one side is 300 and the other side's 135, you're right, you're pissing in the ocean. But if it's half and half and you got 10 in there, all of a sudden...
Yes, mathematically you sound like you're right, but it doesn't work that way. And the
we won't know till we see it, will we?
No, it's been tried. It does not work that way.
In Europe, a lot of times a small party jumping from one side to the other controls a lot of stuff.
Chief, in Europe you have a parliamentary system. We don't.
I'm just saying, if you can't get your speaker in there, you don't get the committee assignments.
You're not going to get your speaker in there.
So you're telling me you wouldn't want 10 people in there that aren't beholden to either party. I sure as hell would.
If you think that's what you're going to get, then you're as crazy on this as Elon.
Well,
and
it's,
you're wrong.
Why can't... You're saying it's impossible for somebody to say, I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican, I just don't want you on either side. I want you to be able to think for yourself and run somebody and win. You're saying, I know it's how difficult it is. Just to get on a ballot, it's difficult. But if it's impossible, what are we? We're one party more than Russia.
Yeah. Actually, we're not even one more party than Russia. We are Russia.
We are Russia. God. On that note, have a nice weekend, buddy. You guys, what's your weather like? We rained all last night.
Everybody complains all the time about, global warming, this, that, the other thing. The reality is that my power bill here over the last 2 months has been down about 25% from last year. So we're actually, even though right now we're in the middle of the, it's stupid hot, not a lot of fun to do anything during the day, and by the way, it's kind of swampy on top of it, which is, miserable. On balance, we're actually not all that bad. Now, this weekend, I think, is going to be, same kind of thing. I wanted to go out, take off, and go do some hiking and, backcountry type stuff.
Got to go early. Go early, bud.
Now, weather's not going to be conducive to it. I'm going to get poured on if I do it, so it's probably going to get bagged, but we'll see.
Hey, on Monday, we might have, Bill Moriarty on with Jan and Nancy to talk about who puts together floodplains, how often they get redone.
I'm fairly well versed in all that nonsense because I lived in Florida where.
Well, good. Make sure you listen in because Bill's obviously good at this stuff, being a civil engineer, and he's very forthright. And S&P futures down 35, NASDAQ futures down 108, a little bit higher than when we came in, but kind of in the same spot. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.